ってて、I've had this for like 10 years or more. I only today figured out what it's for. I've used it for like 5 million things that it doesn't really work for. Today I just figured out what it's for. I already knew it, always knew what it was for, but I never realized that it had some value to use it. So I figured out this morning my feet were cold, and then you just put this on, and then your feet are cold, because that's what it's made for. Because they're too short for a cheddar.
Oh.
You know what I'm saying? They're throws. Yeah, they're only this big. And so, but that's how they make them in the West. They're only that big. So, so.
Utility is the principle.
Yeah. Only took 10 years, but hey. Hari Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavahitamastu Mabinvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Okay. Pranayama, control of the vital force, page 28. After practicing physical exercises, the student becomes aware of a deeper level of personality, prana, the life force, functioning in the body. The word prana is derived from the Sanskrit root ana and the prefix pra. Ana means to animate or vibrate, and pra means first unit. Thus, the word prana means the first unit of energy. Whatever animates or moves is an expression of prana, the life force. All the forces in the world, including individual beings, are different manifestations or expressions of this life force. Right? They're not meaning the soul, they're meaning the body. Right? Because the soul doesn't have to be animated like that. It's just naturally conscious. But it's the body that works by this life air. This vital force animates all the energies involved in the physical and mental processes, and thus it is prana that sustains and activates the body and mind. Prana is the basic principle underlying all biophysical functions. Later writings of yoga explain a highly advanced science of prana, which yogis claim establishes the link between body and mind and vitalizes both. Because the breath is the grossest manifestation of this vital function, the science of prana is also called the science of breath. Continuous regulation of the breath strengthens the nervous system and harmonizes all mental activities. Right. So when the breathing is balanced, then the mind becomes peaceful, everything starts to balance. When it's you know, sometimes more, sometimes less, this and that, then that's a problem. Where people don't breathe, they hardly get in the air. They just sit and they hardly even breathing. You know, all these different things, it just doesn't work so good. Yoga texts say that prana is the creator of all substances and the basis of all functions. The Bhadarayanika Upanishad says that the thread of prana, vayu, runs through and holds together the whole universe. The thread is the cause of the creation, sustenance, and destruction of all substances in the world. The same life force on which humankind depends also sustains the animals and vegetable kingdoms. Prana sustains bodily functions as the subtle airs, which are energies of the subtle body that are controlled by the devas, demigods. This prana is the link between the human beings and the controllers of the universe. The breath is the thread through which prana travels from the cosmos to the individual and from the individual to the cosmos.
Sounds good, no?
Yeah. Depending on its function in different organs. You know, it just means you breathe out and then the air is out here, and then you breathe in and then the air is back in. You know, stuff like that. Depending on its function in different organs, prana is divided into 10 types of subtle airs. The 10 pranas are prana, upana, samana, udana, dhyana. So those are the main five. Then the subtle other aspects, naga, korma, krikala, devadatta, and dhananjaya. Of these, the first five are the most important to the practice of Patanjali Yoga. So you're going to go through all 10.
Looks like.
He just gets the first five. Maybe explains. Prana. Prana here is used to designate a specific type of prana, the vital force of inspiration, right? So prana is the overall, but it's also the first of the five airs, right? So here again is that the word is being used in both contexts. So the vital force of inspiration. In this context, the word prana, pra plus ana, means that which draws in or takes in. The life force that receives the fresh cosmic vitality from the atmosphere, activating the diaphragm, lungs, and nostrils, is called prana. The head, mouth, nostrils, chest, heart, lungs, and navel, and big toes are said to be the main centers of prana. Right? Because that's why when you stub your toe, it really bothers you. You know? Okay, what was that again? Head, mouth, nostrils, chest, heart and lungs, navel, and big toes. This important vital force resides in the brain and governs the functions of the senses and the process of thinking. Certain physical activities, such as the ability of the cerebrum to receive the sensations of smell, sound, taste, touch, and vision, the function of the cranial nerves, and the power that governs all mental activities, are the functions of prana. Primitive instincts, emotions, intelligence, self-control, memory, concentration, and the power of judgment or discrimination are manifestations of prana. As long as prana is in its normal state, all the organs function properly. Bodily toxins, intoxicants, malnutrition, the aging process, frustration, fatigue, restlessness, and physical and mental shocks disturb the vital force. Okay, bodily toxins, intoxicants, malnutrition, the aging process, frustration, fatigue, restlessness, and physical and mental shocks. When the vitality of the mind starts to decay due to such conditions, then higher abilities such as intelligence, memory, concentration, discrimination, and patience start to diminish, and the lower instincts or emotions become predominant. Right. So this is going to be on the material platform, because you can see is that the spiritual can still function despite this. Right, people can still be very focused and everything spiritually, though materially they can't. Right? So you have to distinguish between the two. The one doesn't have an effect on, as long as we're more attached to the external, then it will have an effect only because we're attached to the external. Right? Just like we're attached to the material concept, therefore it has an effect on our consciousness. If we're not attached to it, how will it affect us? Right? So in the same way as the functioning of the pranas in the body, then as long as we're more attached to it, then it has its effect. It's working nicely, we're inspired, so we're chanting as good, this, that. It's not working so nicely, we're not as inspired. But if we come to the point where we have that proper situated in Krishna consciousness, then it doesn't bother us. So whether the body functions nicely or not, one is just as conscious. As we can see, Srila Prabhupada was fully conscious, even though physically there wasn't a whole lot going on. You know, the things weren't, you know, what you call ideal, like that. So we see all the acharyas, anyone like that, is that despite the physical condition, it doesn't affect. So that's the idea. If one's properly practicing Krishna consciousness, then when, as one gets older, as there's more anxieties, there's more responsibilities, all these things that come up with life, then it still doesn't affect the spiritual life. But if you wait and leave it, you know, the longer you leave it, then the more difficulty you have to deal with.
Right on.
Yeah. In this sequence here, you can also relate to that verse of lust leads to anger, which means loss of memory.
Lust leads to anger. Kind of. Yeah, you could say is that in that it would probably be defined that the light bearer is not being directed properly. But the
lower emotions come.
Yeah, but it's not necessarily it's there. There it's because of our attachment. We want something. When we don't get it, we get frustrated. Mm-hmm. That produces the anger. That then produces then the lack of intelligence and like that. So that's taking it from the principle of our focus on the senses or not. Because the senses functioning is working by prana. So does that make sense? So in other words, you're going to take a mechanical system here and try to work back from there. You put all the physical things in line, and then the subtle things come in line, and then they can purify into the mind and then bring the consciousness. And then that way then try to make everything work well. But the difficulty is that, you know, for it to work really well, you need a little bit extra time, you know, which might be a bit more than we have on hand, you know. Does that make sense? Because it means we all have 100 years, but we have 100 human years, not 100 years of the demigods, you know, so then... Yes?
In old age, these lower instincts and emotions become predominant?
Means that they'll come up if someone's not trained. If someone's trained, then they already have that control in that, and they won't. But we see is that they reduce also, so they don't deal in those areas. So in other words, if someone's not trained and he's still attached to everything, then you see is that they can't, you know, control. They get hungry, they want to eat immediately, and they become again kind of like a kid, like that. But if they're trained, then it doesn't bother them. But it just means that as it goes, it's just easier. So that's why also then older people, you feed them first. You know, so kids, old people, pregnant ladies, you feed them all first, right? Because they're the ones that can't wait, you know. In the cosmos and in the body, there's a continuous flow of solar and lunar energy. Also referred to in the yoga text as positive and negative energy, as pitta and kapha, bile and phlegm, fire and water, light and darkness, male and female, and so on. When prana is predominated by solar energy, it is active and the right nostril is open. But when lunar energy predominates, it is passive and the left nostril is open. The flow of prana through the right or the left nostril provides specific conditions and changes in mood and behavior. Okay, so that finished that. Yeah, so it means that you have the down the backbone, you have the two channels going, and then the middle is the Ida Pingala and
Sushumna.
Yes, yeah, so that is where the solar and lunar energies are moving. So it's just a matter of then which side it's on, depending upon what you've done. Different things you do will change it. Different conditions will change it. Anything, if you're sleeping, it'll be on one side. When you wake up, it'll change. And go to the toilet, it'll change again. Take a bath, it'll change. Any of these kind of things, it'll change it. So they have an effect. So the more one has regulated the life, the more one is Krishna conscious, then the less these things bother you. Like that. Because either of them have. The solar has its positive elements. It has negative. The moon has positive and also has negative. So the point is there's no such thing as something is ideal and something only exclusively and something's not ideal exclusively. It means we try to make it that way. But everything, whatever is weak in something, then it means it has the opposite element will be strong. You know. So that's there. Okay, apana. Apana is the excretory vital force. Expulsive movements occurring in the bowels, bladder, uterus, seminal glands, and pores during defecation, urination, menstruation, ejaculation, perspiration, and all our other kinds of, any kinds of ations, right? kinds of excretions are due to the function of apana. The reproductive organs, anus, thighs, ribs, root of the navel, and the abdomen are said to be the abode of apana. When the excretory vital force, which functions through the thoracic and abdominal muscles, is disturbed, then symptoms such as sneezing, asthma, croup, or hiccups are observed. Okay. Because it's what makes things go out of the body. Prana is what pulls in energy. So apana is what gets rid of it, you know, like that. Samana. Samana is the digestive and assimilating force that makes food suitable for absorption and then assimilates it. This vital force is seen in the entire body, not just in the digestive system. Because of samana is present in the skin, vitamin D can be absorbed from the ultraviolet rays of the sun. The region between the heart and the navel center is predominantly involved in the absorption and digestion of food. And this part of the body is therefore considered to be the main center of this vital force. This vital force is responsible for growth and nourishment. Abnormalities of the assimilating vital force result in nervous diarrhea, dyspepsia, impaired digestion, intestinal colic, spasmodic or nervous retention of urine, constipation, and the like. All right, so it's what will digest and what will absorb anything. It means it makes things usable to the body and then also absorbs them so that the body actually uses them. So it does both, like that. Udana. Udana means energy that uplifts. It is the force that causes contraction in the thoracic muscles, thereby pushing air out through the vocal cords. It is, therefore, the main cause of the production of sound. All physical activities that require effort and strength depend on this vital force. It is said to be situated in the larynx, the upper part of the pelvis, all the joints, and the feet and hands. So everything that performs basically the physical activities. So then that's where it's situated. Vyana. Vyana is the contractile vital force. All rhythmic or non-rhythmic contractions take place because of this vital force. It pervades the whole body and governs the process of relaxing and contracting the voluntary and involuntary muscles. This force also governs movements of the ligaments and sends sensory and motor impulses through the nervous tissues. It is involved in the opening and closing of the eyes as well as the opening and closing of the glottis. The ears, eyes, neck, angles, nose, throat are said to be the main centers of this vital force in the body. Fibrosis, sclerosis, atrophy, and pain in muscular and nervous tissues are the result of abnormalities in the contractile vital force. Okay. Food and breath are the main vehicles through which prana enters the body. Food contains a grosser quality of prana than does the breath. One can live for a few days without food, but without breath one cannot function normally for even a minute. This is the reason that the yoga system places so much importance on the science of breath. The regulation of the movement of the lungs is the most effective process for cleansing and vitalizing human system. It purifies and strengthens the nervous system, which coordinates all the other systems in the body. Yogis have developed the most intricate and deep science related to the nervous and circulatory systems. But this science goes beyond the mere study of nerves, veins, and arteries. The science of breath is related to subtle energy channels called nadis. According to yogis, the body is essentially a field of energy, but only a very small part of that energy is utilized, and so a great part of it remains dormant. With the help of pranayama, the science of prana, however, a student of yoga can unveil that energy field, expand it, and channel it to explore higher states of consciousness. Yogi texts say, one who knows prana knows the Veda's highest knowledge. And one of the Upanishads claimed that prana is Brahman. The science of prana and the science of breath are thus of central importance in the yoga system. Right? Because Prabhupada, Krishna says, he's the life force. He's the one that digests, assimilates, you know, and everything like that. So that means, that specifically then, Krishna's saying he's the samana. Like that. So it means that energy has to be coming, because energy doesn't come from just anywhere. It's not that the air is not an energy, right? Because that energy, so that all has to eventually go back to Krishna. Otherwise, how do we get energy from it? Right? That's, yes.
I was just wondering about my name, Aryan Prana. So is that, would that be, say, the prana coming from Hari, or the prana given to Hari from... Like, I was always thought it was Radharani.
I mean, I would take it as Hari Prana, because what's the life of Krishna? It's not that he sits around there and has to do his yoga exercises. So his energy is Radharani. Because, see, as you also take it as Krishna being, as that we were reading in the morning, Krishna being the complete personality of Godhead, then his Srup Shakti is the complete energy. So that complete energy, that's Radharani. Yeah, because prana, you take it as life. Because prana has so many uses. Because we see prana means all the airs. Prana means one of the airs. Prana just means there. Because let's go back. Okay, that's what draws in or takes in. Right? So the Hari prana, that which draws in or takes in Hari. Right? So, you know. In other words, everything goes back to the personal. These are the mechanics of how things work. But especially in the technical age, we become overly attracted by them. Like before, is that it's all, it's not so much separated. You know, so in the Vedic, you do end up with nerds, but it's generally, it's all part of the lifestyle and everything, so it doesn't become separated off so much. But in the modern context, since there's no specific lifestyle, then when one gets into science or into mechanics, then one overly takes it as important. And so then all these things people get, like if we're talking just regular language, that, you know, this is what you breathe in, you get energy from breathing and breathe out and stuff like that, then it's, you know, yeah. But when we say, you know, what do you call it? What was that one before? It was really good.
Cosmos.
Yeah, that's linked between human beings and the controls of the universe, you know. The life breath is the thread through which prana travels from the cosmos to the individual and from the individual to the cosmos, right? And then it starts to get really good, you know? So we become distracted by those, and then we forget that those mechanics are only so that you have the energy so you can perform devotional service. So then it becomes a problem, because then, because it does do that, so then someone might take it and then overly put an emphasis on doing the, you know, pranayama and balancing those things, making sure they're always in good place with this good air. So they consider all that, but then one gets so focused on that, one forgets that that's only to support devotional service. But it becomes, because it's for devotional service, then the mistake is making that it is devotional service. And so then you can get distracted. It means anything. Mechanics of this, mechanics of nutrition. You know, any of these kind of mechanics that have to do with the body or the mind, you know, get together, sit in a circle, and then you talk all kinds of things and say whatever you feel, and, you know, do all that kind of jazz, you know, like that. And so then, you know, these things go on, and then, but we get overly distracted that they're only meant, if they have any use, it's only so that you can function properly in devotional service. They're not devotional service themselves. You know what I say? Does that make sense? You know. It's just like the car doesn't run without petrol. Okay? So putting petrol in the car is not driving the car. Does that make sense? But, so therefore, seeing that to the physical and mental health is useful for devotional service, but it's not devotional service.
Have that petrol car?
Oh, we're talking about yoga and pranayama. And we just came across, listen to this one. The breath is the thread through which the prana travels from the cosmos to the individual and from the individual to the cosmos. Not bad, right? So this is the yoga system. This is what.
Very.
Yes.
Esoteric.
Deep, yes. Yeah. Oh, here was an interesting thing. What was it? The apana, which what everything takes out of the body. And it says when this excretory vital force, which functions through the thoracic and abdominal muscles, is disturbed, then symptoms such as sneezing, asthma, croup, or hiccups are observed. So that comes from apana being off. But that was interesting.
The lower apanas.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's
interesting stuff.
Yeah, yeah. No, this means mechanically it's great, you know. But the problem is when you mistake it for devotion. That's the.
That, like to get bewildered
by everything. Yeah, it's more. It's kind of because it's very exact and scientific, and you know you're doing it, so therefore you have the result. You know, because I put the thing in the pot, therefore it's a great prep.
Yeah.
rather than no, because I know what cooking is, you know, which includes putting it in the pot. You know, so that's what he said, is that, you know, so if I do the pranayama, then I have the energy, then I can do devotional service. So they think it is the devotional service. That's why I said putting the petrol in the car is not driving the car.
Or unless I do that, I cannot do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, it may assist. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I ran out of petrol this morning, so
the
petrol example is really good.
Okay, yeah. At least you get exercise, right? You have to push it. Okay. Yes.
Also, it seems that the results of devotional service, they are more subtle.
Yes.
So then some devotees are bewildered, and by doing this, then they get like more tangible result, and then they think, oh, this is like really high or something.
Yeah, and no, because it's anything. You can take anything and turn it into a very subtle, you know what I'm saying? It's just like when according to, you know, all these systems of yoga, movement, and energy, then your main points are, you know, through the sense where the solar plexus are, because then the whole body comes into here. But then also you have in your hands here and at the bottom of your feet. So that you could get into this whole head trip about shaking hands, how it's actually the combination of the vital energies and like this and that. You know, you could do a whole thing, you know, so everybody would like to be totally into shaking hands, you know, like that. So it's the thing is the mechanics of anything, because it's all created by Krishna, everything is amazing and wonderful and special. You know? But the problem is if we mistake that if that's special, then how much special is the person who's created it? And how much more special is the relationship with the person who's created it? So that's the difficulty in when devotees get distracted by these things. Though they help, but like Prabhu was saying there, is that one shouldn't get distracted and think that that's the cause of my devotional service being good. It can assist, but it's not the cause of it. Devotional service is independent. Is that what you were kind of getting at? Or?
No, I was thinking already for the devotees who already practice, and then they suddenly discover this, going to some yoga club and even preaching this then, and they see, oh, and then their mind is like blown away. But why?
Why? It's probably they didn't have the subtlety to notice those things before, and they're able to catch that because it's, you know, more, how you say? It's subtler. You know, but they haven't quite caught the subtleness of the devotional. You know? I mean, I can't exactly answer, because I've always wondered that myself. How is anybody impressed by New Age? As if it's some new far out thing. I've never figured that one out at all. So
I was thinking also because the sense gratification improves if you're doing yoga, and for most people that's what it means to be like, to feel good physically and mentally means that you're doing well, you're advancing.
Yeah, well, they make all these things is that if I'm energetic, means you want to be enthusiastic in devotional service. So if I'm just enthusiastic, that's devotional service. It's all the same kind of making the same mistakes.
You know, the goal of devotional service is not necessarily feeling good, but you will feel bliss if you keep doing it. I mean, regardless of how you feel.
Means anything engaged in Krishna's service is going to be nice. You know, so, but it's not that's what makes devotional service. You know, you take the vegetables, you cook them really nicely for Krishna, then when you take the prasad, it's very nice. But it's not that, it's the vegetables that made it, the devotion better. You know what I'm saying? It means you use a machine. It's not that the machine is actually the cause of. But if we're absorbed in matter, then, because the machines are there, it appears more that way. But if you're talking about people, it has nothing to do with it. Yeah. Yes.
When you're saying, like, in perfection, the human body obviously is a big point to achieve devotional thoughts.
Right.
So if one has achieved devotional thought, one is in devotional service, and when the mind is in malfunction, like the person is still in the body, the soul is still in the body, but, you know, obviously illness and disease and that sort of thing, that and, you know, states like pain and things like that don't affect devotional service.
They technically don't affect. We may become affected, but devotional service doesn't become affected. Does that make sense? Means, in other words, you can chant your japa whether you're, you know, feeling great or not feeling great. You know, it'll still work. You can still remember Krishna whether things are wonderful or not. So it may mean a specific service you can't do. You know, so maybe you can't, you know, drive the car or cook or something. But it doesn't mean you can't be involved in devotional service, because the driving of the car isn't in itself devotional service. It's when it's used for Krishna, it becomes devotional service. Does that make sense? The potato is not automatically spiritual. It's only becomes spiritual when you cook it for Krishna. You understand? The material energy on its own is not spiritual. It's when you engage in Krishna's service, then it becomes spiritualized. So it's the spiritualization process that's actually the one we're looking for. But we engage whatever's our nature, our conditioning, in the Lord's service. So it appears that the conditioning is devotional service, but it's not.
I was thinking of an example, like if someone loses the ability, for example, to chant.
You never lose the ability to chant. How can you lose the ability to chant?
Well,
you can chant in the mind. Yeah. I mean, there was a case, I think, in Indonesia where some parents, the kid had become a devotee, and they caught them. Maybe it was Malaysia. It was some of those places. They caught them and had them turned over to some, you know, these psychiatric people, so they thought they had gone nuts, right? So then they gave them all these and the person wouldn't stop thinking about and talking about Krishna and this and that. So they gave some medicines that completely wipes out the memory, so they don't know who they are, anything. And so they did that, so the devotee didn't know who he was or anything, but he was still chanting Hare Krishna. So at that point they kind of figured, this is not going to work. Yes.
There's a video where Prabhupada's oldest disciple, she's in a home in America, and Niranjana Swami went to see her, and she's completely debilitated, and she can't do anything for herself. All she does is chant Hare Krishna. She doesn't speak any other words other than singing. She sings kirtan. It was far out.
Okay. Yeah, so it's independent. Means as long as we, let's say I identify myself as a young, strong, dynamic person. So therefore, when I'm healthy, then I go out and I'm inspired, I do lots of service, I do that. And then if I'm sick in that, I don't do so much service, because my identity is that I'm, you know, young, strong, and healthy. But if my identity is I'm servant of Krishna, then if I'm healthy, I'll do these services, and if I'm not healthy, I'll do other services. Then it's unaffected. You know what I'm saying? In other words, there's emphasis given to the need of engaging our conditioning in the Lord's service only because we're attached to it. Otherwise, what's the need? You know what I'm saying? It's only because we're interested in it. We're interested in family life or in money or social prestige or physical health or mental peace, or these are our values. So therefore then those are engaged in the Lord's service. Point is, it's whatever you have, use for the Lord. So you value those, then use them for the Lord. Then there's the question, what does the Lord actually want? That's a different thing. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Maharaj, you're asking about the new age.
Yeah.
One of the things I think about it is that bring devotional service independent from the conditioning. Some devotees sometimes lose the, let's say, the link between the conditioning and how to engage the conditioning in devotional service. And then when they do that in the New Age, they find that it's addressed. Therefore, they feel attracted to it.
I mean, it's a subtlety. It's just more subtle.
Yeah, like the feeling. And,
but I mean, in the philosophy, you can see we're going through here, how subtle it is.
Yeah.
You don't get any of that detail. I guess because it uses nice language, you know. Like what we're saying there, you know. Flowing from the individual to the, you know.
I mean, emotions. You
know, or we're all related because we're all breathing. What I breathe out, the other person breathes in. And, you know, we all are connected, you know. You have all these nice stuff like that. You know, so. Really, you know, it sounds great. That's the thing. The thing about New Age is it sounds very nice, you know. It addresses something, either that piece or that, or if you're into UFOs and conspiracy, then, you know, the fear. And, you know, something it addresses, it creates some...
Yeah. I think it's also what we're saying is the thing that you often say, that you chant your japa for 2 hours a day, but what about the other 22 hours?
Okay.
The devotees aren't in connecting the other 22 hours.
Yeah, but the Vedas show how to connect that, but the problem is it's in the mode of goodness.
Yeah.
While the New Age basically is, you know, a very pleasant combination of passion and ignorance, you know. Maybe just a touch of goodness, that there is some basis of knowledge, but that basis is there, is going back to the Vedas. I mean, astrology didn't come, they didn't find it under a rock somewhere. You know, herbal medicine also. You know, all these things are coming back, going back to the Vedas. Just that people, you know, when, you know, it's like, let's say you take Parasaram is doing a tour, right? And anybody that you know, he's cutting off their heads. So somehow or another, you and a couple of friends are able to get away, and you head north, right? And since you're not too interested in Siberia, then you turn left, right? And you go into Europe. Okay. So now many, you know, millions of years later, so you're going to take with you the Vedic culture that you had, but after so many millions of years, then there's no connection with the Vedas anymore and that. So these different things are just handed down in tradition, the local, you know, herbal sciences and other things like that, if you know, if there are any. And so then they don't see, but it all comes eventually, it all originally comes from the Veda. So it's just, there's no understanding of what's coming from the Veda, and then they get distracted by the mechanics of it or whatever, like you said, the opportunities of sense gratification or peace or something, I don't know. But the Vedas give so much detail, you know, like that.
Yeah, maybe it's that lack.
But it just requires more mode of goodness.
That lack of knowledge and the connection, the lack of connection to goodness.
Yeah, I would say it seems to be more of a goodness thing. You know, but I think Prabhupada had mentioned that if you're not a devotee, then New Age is a step up, because at least they're interested in something subtle. But if you're a devotee, then it's a step back. Yeah.
As you mentioned, when something...
I'm not sure if we're addressing your question at all here. Getting anywhere? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Because I've always been kind of like amused or amazed at how devotees actually get distracted by it. You know, I can't figure out what would they find there that isn't already here. So I don't know. So I'm not so good at answering that. You know, other than it just sounds good.
Maybe because it's more easily available.
Yeah,
like
it is.
It's available.
Well, you don't have to surrender, actually, to,
yeah,
you know, it's like...
It's not an ego.
It's impersonal. Thing. Yeah, it means to do yoga, it's like you get the benefit. It's not like you have to surrender or something. It's not like they're actually practicing Ashtanga yoga where you have to surrender to the Lord. You know, you go in there, and as long as they have... It's nice, and there's some incense, and they got the little gong there, you know, then, you know, it's all great. You know?
Yeah. And nobody's touching your ego.
Yeah, it's that's like, true. No. It's always talking about you're this, you are the universe, you are, you know, like that. Yeah, so it's
So it's fact, easy. It's,
yeah, that's true. Yeah, it gives you an identity. It's easy. Yeah. The other one, you have to actually surrender.
Temple commander.
Always.
Well, that's why the gong is there, just in case things get too out of hand, you know. Okay. Okay. According to Patanjali, pranayama means to refine and regulate the flow of inhalation and exhalation. When one can breathe deeply and noiselessly without jerks or pauses, one can allow one's prana to expand and to be awakened for higher attainments. Patanjali does not advise the practice of pranayama until one has achieved a still and comfortable posture. Right? So in other words, you don't do pranayama until you've achieved a still and comfortable posture. So that means it has to be asana siddhi, as we said. When you can hold the asana for 2 hours, 45 minutes, and it's comfortable, right? Then you can start doing pranayama like that. Otherwise, okay, you're doing a little something. It's good for, you know, at least you're breathing a little better. There is some regulation, you know, 5 minutes out of 24 hours, you're regulating. But for a serious, you know, what they're talking about here, means you have to be able to sit like that. Then you can do it. Because otherwise, if you're sitting, you're worried about your posture, then how are you going to, you know, calm the breath? Because you sit here deeply and noiselessly. That means you're not taking it sudden. It's very slow in and holding and slow out. So that means, and very deep. So that means you have to be everything, you know, physically put together nicely. Postures that remove physical tension and provide stillness are therefore the prerequisites to pranayama. Patanjali lists four kinds of pranayama: external, bahya vritti, in which the flow of prana? Huh? I don't know. Sometimes there is these funny little things. Yes, the flow of prank. I would think it's there, but just exactly below it, then there's flow of prana. Then I thought, well, maybe it's a misspelling, but maybe the prana, maybe they're supposed to be prong. You know? The flow of prong. Okay. It's controlled during the exhalation. Internal, abhyantara vritti, which the flow of prana is controlled during inhalation. And intermediate, baha bhyantara, vishayakshepti. No, there's no T. Shapi. Vishayakshipi, in which the other two pranayams are refined, and the fourth, chaturta, in which pranayam is transcended. The first three pranayams must be regulated within space and time, but the fourth pranayam is highly advanced and transcends these limitations. When the external and internal pranayams become very subtle, then, because of intense concentration in a perfect relayed state, one loses awareness of time and space. And thus the fourth pranayama happens automatically, right? Because you have to lose track of time and space if you're going to sit in one place without moving for 36,000 years, right? It's required. You know? So if you're sitting there and wondering, you know, what's happening, or, you know, the kids, or what's happening at work, or this or that, then you haven't gotten to the point of being able to actually use this, you know? Right, so it means when you breathe in, you can stop, you control that, how you breathe in. When you breathe out, and then in between, where you just hold, holding it out, holding it in. These are the three that you can work with. Then when you transcend that, then that's the time then you can move on to the next section. Right? Yes.
When you do that, pranayama, where is your devotional service?
Where's your devotional service? Well, I mean, if you're looking at it from Astanga Yoga, then when you get, you know, to these, through pratyahara, dharana, and dhyana, then you're going to meditate on super soul.
Thanks, you're well.
36,000 years, yeah. That's not bad. That's why we don't, Arjuna didn't take that so seriously when Krishna recommended him. He says that's very, very difficult. And that's Dwapara Yuga at the end, so that's 5,000 years ago.
You know, so it's...
So you mentioned that bhakti yoga can already start from the very beginning.
Yeah, bhakti yoga already starts. So therefore, when you're doing the preliminaries, it's already devotional. So you could take it, okay, then you're breathing nicely so that, you know, it improves the health, so that you're in the mind, so that you can do something nicely like that. Because in the Pancharatra, during the deity worship, then before doing Manasa Puja, then it's recommended that you could at that time do pranayama. But it's not much. But you also use Gopal mantra and things like that. But, you know. Yeah, no, it's just, I think it's just three cycles is all it considers. It's considered to purify the mind. You know, it means, what is it? You breathe in for 16, you hold it for 64 counts, and breathe out for 32. That's your standard. No? And if you want to have more fun, then you hold it out for 64. And then you do three rounds of that. So even that would be too much. so yeah, generally it's not used so much.
And before Gayatri, is it mentioned?
It can also there. It means if you're doing the whole installing the Gayatri, calling, doing the whole thing with the water, all that, it takes about 10 minutes. Then pranayama is part of it. But, you know, we're just doing good enough where we actually chant Gayatri or even chant it in the actual range of time in the day, you know, like that. So, you know what I'm saying? But, you know, 3 a.m. till, you know, basically before breakfast, 12 o'clock until about 3 p.m, and 6 o'clock until whenever we go to bed. Yeah.
It was one of the ladies who was driving, attending his diet free, and drinking a ginger beer.
Yeah. So there you just ask him to stop the car and get out. Yeah. I think it was Hridaya Nandamarsh. He's driving along, and the devotee is driving. He's driving with one hand, and that he says. One should offer service with two hands. We require two-handed service. He wanted both hands on the wheel. Yeah. Okay.
Maharaj, I've seen devotees driving, chanting japa, and then the phone rings, and then they hold the phone, and the wheel is just on the phone.
You got to have faith in God, right? It's like, otherwise, how is it going down the road? Yeah, no, they're not.
He's steering with the knees.
He's steering with the knees. Oh, okay. Yeah, see, here we have it.
With the baby.
Huh?
Yes, some belly.
Okay. Yeah. I guess between the knees and the stomach, then you can hold it. Yeah. That would work. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, no, these are... Yes. Okay.
And would it be better if Prabhupada would incorporate at least some of those regulations?
It means like driving with both hands on the wheel?
Maybe.
Well, he did. You see, he would always tell them to drive properly and stuff.
Driving is okay, but about pranayama and more...
The point is you have to be peaceful, and that means pranayama only works after asana. So if the devotee can't sit there and you know, in front of the deities for that time or the time of japa and peacefully sit there, because maximum what you get is an hour or something, right, before the next program. Hour and a half, but asana siddhi is 2 hours 45 minutes. So if they can't sit there for an hour and a half, they won't be able to sit there for 2 hours 45 minutes, then they won't actually be able to start pranayama. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So therefore, the best control of the breath is chanting, because you're breathing in and then chanting for a while. So it is pranayama. Because the idea of pranayama is the breath in is shorter than the breath out. Right? And it's in a controlled way, rhythmic way. So by chanting, then that's already happening. So you're already getting the benefits from chanting. Because the qualification to actually do real prana, because means you want to put in some yoga studio kind of thing. That's one thing. But if you want to do real pranayama like the yogis do, so then who's qualified? Who could sit and do that? Even those who consider themselves into yoga probably aren't qualified. Maybe what's his name could do.
Iyengar.
Yeah, Iyengar, yeah, like that. But I'm just saying of the devotees, who's the Swami? Paladinandamaraj. Maybe he could do it, right? Okay. So then you have, one devotee can do it. So it's already included. Because the point is the breath is controlled. So the breath means, as we saw before, energy or activities. So if the activities are engaged in Krishna's service, that means the breath is controlled. So it comes as a side thing. The benefits of pranayama are gained by one who engages his activities in Krishna's service. Right? So that's what we're saying, is devotional service is natural. All these things are automatically done. But for the yogi here, the Astanga yogi, then it's a very, very mechanical system that he has to go through, very regulated and so. It means you can't do that just anywhere. You have to go out and be in a peaceful environment, no disturbances. No mobile phones, no SMSs, no Facebook. Forget it.
A leaf if you're on a good day.
A leaf on a good day, yeah. Yeah, see, you wouldn't even get reception at Gomuk, so you couldn't call up for pizza, and even if you did, they'd say you're kidding. Yeah. Okay. In this pranayama, the breath becomes so fine and subtle that an ordinary breathing movement cannot be observed. Without practical instruction from a competent teacher, it is not possible to understand and apply this method of pranayama successfully. The practice of pranayama prepares fertile ground for concentration. The first four stages of yoga discussed thus far, that is, yama, niyama, asana, pranayama, are sometimes collectively known as hatha yoga. So pratyahara, withdrawal of the senses. The fifth limb of yoga is pratyahara, the withdrawal or control of the senses. In outward activities, the mind contacts external objects through the five senses of sight, hearing, touch, taste, and smell. The interaction of the senses with their objects is like the blowing wind that disturbs the surface of the lake of mind and causes waves to arise. Withdrawal of the senses is a technique through which a student acquires the ability to voluntarily draw his attention inward and keep his mind from distractions. Right? Because the senses are pulling in information, but the mind reduces that down to one particular one. Right? So it means one could say, well, how would that work, that you're cutting out all this? All you have to do is actually cut out one, the one that you're focusing on, right? Because you're cutting out all the other ones anyway. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay, so then that means he just pulls the mind in, and that way the sense is pulled in, then there's no contact with the outside. So that means already you have to be able to sit, because if you pull ever the senses in, unless you're sitting well, it's not going to work nicely. Don't try this on a escalator or something. It's not good. Patanjali defines pratyahara as the withdrawal of the senses from their objects and their establishment in the mind. The senses are constantly wandering from one object to another, and the mind also wanders with them. Although the mind is more subtle than the senses are the vehicles of the mind as it travels on its journey. But the mind is master of the senses because without it, the senses could not contact or experience any objects. Wherever there is contact of the senses with their objects, the mind is necessarily involved. So withdrawal of the senses actually means withdrawal of the mind. Vyas, the Yoga Sutra's commentator, therefore says that when the senses are disconnected from their objects, they dwell in or dissolve into the mind. Once the modifications of the mind are controlled, it is not necessary to make any extra effort to control the senses. When the queen bee, mind, flies, all the bees' senses fly, And when she sits, all the beasts sit around her. Right? That's the example. Right, so therefore, once the mind is fixed on Krishna, then all the senses automatically follow and serve Krishna. Right? It's not a separate existence. You don't have to separately deal with that. Relaxation is actually the practice of pratyahara. When one wants to relax a limb of his body, he simply disconnects the communication of the mind and the senses so to that particular limb. This is called releasing tension. And when one has mastered voluntary relaxation in this way, he attains perfect control over the senses and mind and enters a state of concentration. The process of withdrawing the senses from the mind is actually the process of recollecting the scattered forces of the senses and mind. When these forces are no longer dissipated, concentration naturally takes place. So we do it to some degree, but then the point is because there's other things in the mind, it immediately goes out. Once we're relaxed, immediately then it becomes active. Because our purpose is to be active, but we're disturbed in this activity. So we're looking for peace and relaxation so that we can properly engage the senses. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why 20 minutes a day, everyone's happy. Because if it creates a little bit of peacefulness, a little bit of relaxation, so that we are re-inspired to be involved in the material activities, then we're great. Right? Does that make sense? So no one's looking for more. So pratyahara, people do it. You know, just like when you do exercises, regulate exercise, you have to control the breath. You know, all these different things. Like runners, they control the breath, they slow down the heartbeat, they do all different kinds of things. So it gets an effect like that. But this is then put together scientifically, not for just physical comfort or, you know, sensual pleasure, but it's for self-realization.
Right?
Yes.
So it seems that the yoga people, they're also afraid of the devotees, preachers, those who preach Krishna consciousness, because for us, it's a lifestyle, it's not a 20 minutes, they offer to their students, and they actually afraid, then we take their people, and then they become, you know, like proper devotees, and then they lose their taste.
Yeah, it is natural, because point is, you have a taste in Krishna consciousness, yoga as a system doesn't have much taste. Means if it doing a little bit, you can, and you know, it keeps the health balanced nice, fine. But it won't be an absorption. You won't be a yogi as such, you know. It's just something that you do. You know, like that. Yeah, it's true. There's always an anxiety. Like that one Prabhupada would go with that one, what was it, Dr. Mishra or something?
Yeah,
when they went up to, you know, upstate to the ashram and that. Then Prabhupada would start talking, and then he'd say, "No, now we'll have kirtan," right? Just to get Prabhupada to stop talking. You know? Yeah. No, because very rare does anybody actually have any depth in understanding the connections, what it works, what is there. And then even of those who have that, to be able to take that back into a lifestyle, that's going to be even less. And then to be able to apply that in all aspects of life, who knows that? So they're very limited in a specific sphere. So that becomes, like you're saying, their identity. So if it's their identity, immediately by adding devotional service, you add a full lifestyle, so then you don't require that identity. So then, yeah. Yeah. Dharana, right? So now we've brought the pranayam to the point where we're on the fourth stage of pranayam, which is one's lost the connection with time and space and the breath. Basically, you can't tell breathing is going on. The life airs are still involved, but it's such that the breath has been stopped, as you know, in the normal sense of the cave, you know, of the understanding. Then pratyahara, then you can pull in all the senses, right? So now we move, once that's done, to dharana. Concentration. Having withdrawn the senses and mind from external objects, the mind must then carry a single thought pattern in a desired direction. Concentration. the sixth limb of yoga, is a process through which one withdraws the mind from all directions and focuses its power for further journey inward. To facilitate this process, one selects a suitable object for concentration, such as a mantra, a form, or a center in the body, to name a few. In a relaxed state, past impressions accumulated in the mind rise to the surface, disturbing the mind's ability to stay on one thought pattern. Now, this would answer why is it when you sit down to chant japa or that, all these things comes up. Because it says in a relaxed state. So actually, the mind's in a relaxed state. We'll take, oh, it's very disturbed. No, it's in a relaxed state. That's why these things come up. Right? Now, it's only if you take them seriously, then it becomes disturbed. Right? But if you don't, it's just they're just coming up. You just let them go. Like that. Generally, also traditionally, a mantra is always used. But then using these other things along with it, because the idea is you can catch something between two points. It's fixed. Right? So between the mantra and whatever you're using for meditation.
Would that be a cue for us to introduce, when preaching to them, the Mahamantra Hare Krishna?
Sorry?
They use a mantra.
Yeah, they should use Hare Krishna. It means they'll get much better effect if they use that. You know, like that. I mean, we discussed in the other day was, you know, Dhruva Maharaj, you know, perfected his yoga in 6 months. He was using Om Namo Narayanaya, right? So in other words, he was using spiritual mantra rather than just something off of a chakra or something else like that.
So he may have used Hare Krishna mantra, it would have taken him 3 months?
Maybe less. You know, but then we would really say, ah, no, this can't be happening. You know, like that. You know, give us 6 months, okay, you know. He's a kid, we'll let him get away with it. Because all the adults, we see it takes them 60,000, 10,000, 36,000, like that. You know. In daily life, one unconsciously and involuntarily concentrates in many ways. In extreme happiness or sorrow, for example, the mind becomes concentrated on one single thought pattern. But such external concentration is motivated by emotion, instinct, or impulse, and is therefore not considered to be yogi concentration. According to Patanjali, concentration is an internal process that takes place in the mind and is volitionally directed by the will. Right, so in other words, you're directing it rather than it's just happening on its own. There are five factors that are helpful in bringing the mind to a state of concentration. One cannot focus the mind unless one has interest in the object on which one wants to concentrate. So developing interest is the first step. Right? Yeah, so then that's the, remember we were discussing before, that's the samvit. You know, yeah. What is it? Jnana, right? Because that's where interest comes up. With interest, attention can then be developed. Voluntary focusing based on interest and directed by willpower and strengthened by determination results in paying full attention to an object. Practice is the next requisite. Regular repetition of techniques that help the mind to flow spontaneously without a break helps form the habit of concentration. For example, setting a specific practice time, choosing a favorable environment, keeping a proper diet, and regulating sleep make it easier to concentrate the mind. Next, using the same straight, steady, and comfortable seated posture every time one practices, and using a smooth, deep, and regular diaphragmatic breathing pattern help one keep the body and mind calm, yet alert. Finally, a calm mind is necessary because an emotionally disturbed mind cannot concentrate. An attitude of detachment from external objects and of witnessing one's own physical and mental activity calms the mind and develops emotional maturity. When the student practices concentration, he is advised not to exert undue effort because effort leads to tension. And tension dissipates or disturbs the nervous system and senses as well as the mind. There's various kinds of concentration, gross and subtle, outer and inner, subjective and objective, and so on. According to Vyasa's commentary on the Yoga Sutras, one can concentrate internally on some point within the body, such as the cardiac center, the base of the bridge between the nostrils, or the tip of the tongue, or one can concentrate externally on any selected object. The object of concentration is pleasant, beautiful, and interesting. Then it's easy for the mind to focus on it for a long time. Using a mantra or the breath for the object of concentration is considered to be the best method for learning to focus the mind, one pointedly in preparation for attaining a meditative state. So this is just to get to the state of meditation. This is not meditation. You're just practicing focusing on one point without any disturbance from anywhere. But you're not meditating on anything, really. Does that make sense? That's the next step, right? Because this is the Astanga Yoga means step by step. You're going through one step at a time. Yeah? Yes.
So according to this description, it seems that when we start chanting japa, then we are already on very high level of
yes.
yoga.
Yes, yeah, it is. That's the point, is that's why the devotional process. Otherwise, you're having to cut out 36,000 years. So it has to start on a high level. But the devotees, because they don't know the mechanics of it, don't appreciate that. And when they learn the mechanics, then they get distracted. They think the mechanics are important. Yeah. But the point is the devotional process of chanting Hare Krishna is already the highest yoga system. It already has the perfect yama, niyama, asana, pranayama, pratyahara. It already has the perfect of all that. It's just a matter of us committing ourselves to it. Because here you have to be committed to do it. And then you get success. So it's the same with chanting. It's just you commit yourself, you get success. But you get it so quickly. You know, and what you're getting is so much more. Here, after 36,000 years, you come to the point of perfect meditation on the super soul. Then you can take up devotional service. So we're starting with that devotional service. So then it's a matter from that, then you can be eternally situated in that devotional service. So it's so much greater. The other one just brings it to the edge, but you don't even actually understand the personality of Godhead. The devotees, devotional service, all these things. So the neophyte actually is more advanced than you in that aspect. You know? But, okay. Dhyana, meditation. Okay. Maybe one more class. See how it goes. Today is Thursday, right?
Thursday.
Yeah, we'll see. Maybe tomorrow we'll finish yoga and then move into Karma Mimamsa. Mm. Jai. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jayanti Gaura Premanandini.